Hello, you're listening to Laser Graves, a podcast where we dig up movies, music, books, and events from the 80s and discuss how rad they were.
Listening to the Lord of the Dogs. I've been told it's creepy by a very judgmental partner. Even though today my only conversation with another adult was talking to my neighbor about her dogs.
What was your dog's name? That dog's name?
She has three dogs that I have won over. I just actually approached her and said, hi, we've never met, but I pet your dogs. What are their names? And their names are Hudson, the collie, Meatball, the bulldog.
That's the bulldog, yeah.
And then that jerk dog that barks like a chicken, Batman.
Ooh, I already hate it.
Yeah, and well, I mean, he's a jerk dog. But then I realized that I hadn't introduced myself to her, and she's our neighbor and has been for like 8 months. And I said, oh, and what's your name?
And did you say I'm Lord of the Dogs?
I did.
Okay. Well, welcome back to Laser Graves, everyone. I'm your co-host, EK, and over there is, let's hear it.
The former Lord of the Dogs, currently only boring, Mariah Rose Wimmer.
Okay. Well, let's get started. This will be a good one. I love episodes that involve your childhood because it just informs things so much more. And I have heard about this since, oh my gosh, since we were like teenagers. You have talked about this legendary mummy book.
Yeah, and what's crazier is I forgot the name, and you found it for me.
I did.
Because you're a true romantic.
And I'm a researcher. I have a skill set, and I used it to track down House on Hackman's Hill.
You know, research and romance always intermingle.
Yep, it's the Double R Diner. It's where we have our coffee and donuts.
Oh.
Research and romance. So, yeah, this is going to be fun to get into. Anything you wanted to jump into beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is it?
It's almost mummy related in that...
Is it dog related?
Yes.
Okay, go. Just get it. Just do it.
So I was walking to school with the girls today, and it's like a mile walk, and we cross an arroyo, and I've spotted coyotes there. The girls are always wanting to see one, and they haven't. And up across the road comes bolting, like as fast as it can go, a coyote. Right behind it is a German Shepherd chasing it.
Ooh.
Gets better. Behind that is a coyote chasing the German Shepherd.
And behind that is Meatball, the bulldog.
No, and behind that is an overweight owner really sucking at keeping up with the dogs, going, hey, get back here.
So there was a coyote chasing a German Shepherd chasing a coyote?
A coyote running for its life, a German Shepherd chasing that, and then a coyote attacking the German Shepherd.
So it was a German Shepherd sandwich.
Yes.
With two slices of coyote.
And then a side of overweight owner. It was amazing. We all just were like, what? 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 As they came leaping up out of the arroyo and across the road and then down. But we all kind of watched, and it was one of those parenting moments where you're like, do I usher them away in case this ends poorly, or do we just
No, you
watch?
Let them see the circle of life.
No, thankfully, the coyotes were much more wily than the dumb German Shepherd, who it would look like it was chasing its tail at the end.
Oh, interesting. You don't normally think of a German Shepherd as dumb. They're pretty smart dogs.
It really sucked in comparison to the coyotes.
Did the girls freak out? Did they lose their beans when they saw two coyotes?
They mutually, there's beans lost everywhere.
Beans all over.
I think I was like, coyotes, coyotes, oh, German Shepherd.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was really crazy.
You were probably scrambling to find your phone because it didn't happen unless you put it on Instagram.
I really wanted to get a photo, but I actually didn't reach for my phone. I just wanted to watch what happened.
Well, that's cool. Good story.
Thank you.
I'm glad you shared it.
Now it's forever here.
My story is my thrift store find of the week was a Chuck Norris movie.
Oh, you bought a Chuck Norris movie?
Or another.
Ugh.
What do you think? I'm gearing up for the long haul on this podcast. And when I look for films to cover, mm-hmm. I think, what will Mariah fall asleep to? And the world is my oyster.
I feel like
anything and everything
that
is called a movie. all right. Well, let's get to it. That was a riveting coyote story.
What?
And I'm glad you shared it. Uh-huh. And I'm glad you were dismissive of
learning more. Well, what Chuck Norris movie did you get? Was it Sidekicks?
No, it wasn't Sidekicks.
Well, then it doesn't matter. That's the only Chuck Norris movie that matters.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, everybody, this week we are covering a classic from Mariah's childhood, House on Hackman's Hill from 1985 by Joan Lowery Nixon. Let's go ahead and fill in the blanks here on when was the first time you read this? What was the experience like? What were you wearing and how did you react?
Oh, well, this was a bedtime read for me. And I think I was 12 or 13.
Okay. So you read this in the 90s, even though it was an 80s book.
Yeah, that's why we get to cover it. But I was a little bit older. I was sleeping in my hot pink bedroom. And I don't remember what my pajamas were. But I do remember that I had a comforter that was black with electric, like, neon colors all over it. Anyway, I read it, became instantly terrified in a way that haunts me to this day, and actually spend the next year sleeping on my brother's extra bed in his room, because he had, like...
At 12, you were...
Yeah, I freaked out and was like, I can't.
Well, you lived a really sheltered life, too, so that makes sense.
Well, there are a few things to know. In this book, we have hidden passageways.
Mm-hmm.
My house had hidden passageways.
Save it. Save it. Don't spoil the goods, man.
But that's, like, for real. Like, in the house I was living in, it was a weird old parsonage. And my bedroom, you could take the drawers out of the wall, and there was a secret room behind it.
Whoa.
And then there was a false wall in the bathroom that was off of my bedroom. And you could just go into the wall. So everything about the story, I was like, definitely there's a mummy killing me now.
Was there a strange man living in your house?
Just my dad.
No, that you never knew about that lived in the walls?
No.
Okay, just checking. Speaking of which, this is really good setting for this episode, because we were just about to sit down and start recording, and I could hear scratching on the exterior wall, and it's been storming out all night, which is perfect.
Yeah.
So it's been raining and storming, and I hear this scratching on the wall, and you were like, well, you need to go check it out. So
was I?
Yep. So I grabbed the flashlight, and I went out there, and I what I did first was I put a cookie in my pocket, and just in case I got hungry while I was out there.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right. That was a little inside joke for those of you who have already read this book.
The nine of you?
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was pretty successful.
I think it... Oh, no. It was huge. Did you read her accomplishments?
No, not at all.
So she is, like, a major writer. She's written, like, hundreds of books and had tons of awards, like, major, major awards. It was really cool. And it's all around, like, children, mystery and suspense and horror and stuff. Really cool. She's dead now, but...
Mm.
She was
mummified.
Yes, she is. She's got a little captain's cap on. So she was very prolific, wrote this book. So you were freaked out by it.
Terrified. Like truly, truly terrified.
But somehow you were fascinated by it. When was the next time you read it, if ever?
Oh, it was when you researched it because I mentioned it again.
You had never read it again?
No. I think I probably like panicked and threw it in the garbage.
Were you scared when it came in the mail? And
I I was excited, but I was scared. And it actually sat on the bedside table for a while because I didn't know if it would like scare me again as an adult. And it's creepy. It has
some legit creepy scenes in it.
Yeah, so. We'll get to those.
Okay, well, let's get into it because we're in now. We're in the thick of it.
We've set
the 12-year-old. You're coming out of your post New Kids fog. I'm imagining you're in your this is the same bedroom that you were singing Mariah Carey in and doing like choreographed dances.
No, I would do that in my parents' bedroom because it was bigger.
Oh, right. Okay. But this is that time period, right?
And they had a big mirror so we could watch ourselves.
Like puff paint. And okay. I know that.
It was like prepubescent. All arms, legs, tiny torso.
Perm, no perm.
It was like a roll of the dice. One year I'd have a perm, next year I wouldn't.
Okay.
Never was it nice.
All right.
We should go back to that.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to go back in time and just come over for a visit to 12-year-old Mariah's house.
Oh my gosh. This would be the time then where my mom had to take me to the hairdresser to get curls actually cut off underneath because I didn't know how to brush curly hair.
Okay.
I still don't.
let's get started. House on Hackman's Hill. So it opens up. I do have a little, I have to say something right up front.
It
opens up with introducing Debbie and Jeff, and they're going to check out this old house. They're like 12-year-old kids.
I don't think they ever say the age.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, okay. Because I made a note about that later.
Good.
So they're 12. They're going to check out this house that's supposed to have a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there's a reward if you find the mummy. That's the whole like premise of this book. $10,000.
Yeah, who is fronting this money?
Yeah, and first off, how is that house not torn apart at this point? Because $10,000 in the 80s is big, big money.
So the house has been abandoned since I think it was 1911.
Yeah, it's hilarious. The premise of this is absurd. But what I have to say is I immediately was so confused because they were talking about having the same grandparents, but their families had been split. And I thought, are they like, did the parents get divorced and one went to live with one and one went to live with the other? Are they cousins? And I read it, I reread it, then I flipped it over and read the synopsis, and it didn't say it. And then when I looked up the book, it was like, oh, it's about these two cousins.
They say it in the first chapter.
Well, I thought that it doesn't say it. And so a third time I went back, and it is literally the second sentence in the opening paragraph. It says they're cousins. Aww. And I spent the whole book wondering. I was like, no, I'm pretty positive they're cousins. If only they would have said that. And then when I read the third time I looked back at the opening paragraph, I realized it was right there.
Well, that's a little embarrassing.
Well, I felt like to get in the mindset of a book written for like a 10-year-old, I had to read like a 10-year-old, which was to gloss over many of the facts.
I like that. But also, let's have a little caveat. Don't give a 10-year-old this book. Our daughter's almost 10 and 0% chance she could handle this.
That's true. I have mixed feelings, though, because we have very different upbringings. And you, like, tonight, we wanted to watch a movie. We settled on Spy Kids 2 because they love Spy Kids, which is fine. That's age appropriate. I thought they were ready for Goonies. I think they're long overdue for Goonies. And you were saying, the freezer scene with the corpse falling out would freak them out. And I agree that's a little spooky. But at the same time, like, kids have to also, like, experience a little bit of spook. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a tightrope. 80s kids, 90s kids, 2000s kids. I don't know.
It's like they're incapable. I mean, I was already watching Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street at this point, so.
That was not good.
I turned out great. What are you talking
about? You did. You're a diamond.
I'm a what?
Just a diamond. No rough.
What kind of diamond?
No rough. Just
say. I know.
Gleaming.
We're not going to be able to move past it.
I can't because I'll cough.
We'll roll the dice of you
diamond
cough.
Diamond to the rough. I can't do it with this cold.
Okay. So, wow, we're really not getting into this book. So, Debbie and Jeff are going to check out this house with the most absurd premise to start a book ever.
Yeah. And they'd asked their grandma for info.
Yeah.
And she was real dismissive. Like, no, 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 no. Don't go there.
Oh, but then, of course, the neighbor who's been watching their every move. What is it?
Yeah. Mr. Carson. And they're like, yeah, let's go hang out with the really old guy. So he would have been in his, what, 70s?
Oh, no. Yeah, well, yeah, easily, maybe because 80s. He was 12 in 1911.
Okay, so whatever year this book is set in, yeah, sometime in the 80s.
He's way up there, creeping on old kids, or creeping on kids. So, yeah, the neighbor who's watching their every move is, speaking of spilling the beans, he is ready to spill the beans
and
on that house.
Really, that's the bulk of this book is his story.
Which I was not ready for. So this was a pleasant surprise. So I guess I didn't say this up front. I seriously don't think anybody cares, but I had not read this book. This is a first time read for me. This is a book that you had talked about forever. I was so excited to read about it because we had discussed mutual love for mummy books as kids. I read a book late 80s, early 90s. It was also about a mummy, and it was not this book. And
what
I can't,
was it?
I don't know. I don't
know
what
you it
was
tried?
Called. I was trying to look it up right before we started recording. That's what I was looking for, and I can't find it. But it also,
you'll find it.
The premise was a mummy as well. And so, and it freaked me out too. So I liked that we had this kind of shared experience. So I was very excited about this book.
Cool.
And
we got to find yours.
I enjoyed that immediately the device in this book is to switch to his backstory, this old man story. Like,
yeah,
it's like Titanic style, right? Where she's going to be like, you know, are you going to let me talk or not?
Yeah.
So this old man starts to tell the story and go ahead. And if you want to, you want to go down memory lane.
Yeah, I can walk you through the story. Hop in if your notes differ from mine. So he takes us back, neighbor Mr. Carson, to 1911. We learn his father had died and his mom's kind of struggling to make a living. And she's been working as like a secretary for the history department. And the professor of the Egyptian studies is Dr. Hackman. And he's retiring and has hired her to come and help him catalog his notes and all of his artifacts at his very fancy home, which... Let's pause here and say something is wrong with Dr. Hackman if he's living in a mansion, which we'll get to as the story unfolds, with like priceless Egyptian artifacts on a professor's salary. I mean,
I don't know. I guess I didn't even question that part because it's 1911. Like, that was like all the rage.
Okay.
So I don't know. And he doesn't, in his defense, the book does say like, he doesn't have a lot of artifacts. He said, I only have a few, but I really love the ones I have. Remember, he only had a few statues and stuff. He didn't have, like, a ton of stuff, but he seemed to think that what he had was very important.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a little surprising considering the house. So you suspect, or at least I do as an adult, that he's got dealings that extend beyond being a history professor.
Like mob ties or crack cocaine. That's what I thought.
Barbiturates.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So also it should be mentioned, one thing I will insert here is that the kid, well, the old man who's telling his story, his name was Paul.
Paul Carsten and his mom, they're actually living at the house. That's the setup. Like she's supposed to help him catalog from morning till night. So they live in this house. He also has two housekeepers, Jules and Anna. They're a married couple. And also, right when they arrive, Paul notices there's an archway. And above it, there's like, a wooden beam. And upon it are carved the words, "Only I know the secret," which instantly I want to carve on one of the archways in our home.
Yeah.
So it says, "Only I know the secret." And it just kind of moves on from there because they're exploring their house. Paul's mom got a like super swank room with...
Dude, her salary is bonkers. It was like thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's crazy for 1911.
Yeah, I was like, dang, she's rolling in it. And we should also talk about Dr. Hackman. So his first impression is that he's really like very friendly with the mom. It's like he
seems to like the mother for some reason.
Well, he like really respects her, knows she'll do a really good job. So he's confident that she's going to do a great job, but hates kids and doesn't even acknowledge him at first. And he's kind of this short, pudgy guy with a beard.
A distinctive beard.
He's got this blue cap that he always wears. And then there's kind of nice little description there where he talks about the mansion and how fancy it is and how it's like this living museum in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's also, like, it sits on a cliffside.
Yeah. Right? So it's like you climb up a hill to get to the front of the house, and then the backside is over a valley. So, like, the back of the house looks over kind of a cliff.
Yeah. I struggled this entire book all the way up to the very end, thinking that it went to a cliff shoreside, like to water.
Like water?
Which I thought would have been really cool.
That would have been cool.
But I had to keep telling myself, oh, it's like in the forest, kind of. And this is just a cliff in the forest. Because we learned that mainly because he has shown his room.
Yeah, after looking at Paul's mom's, like, swanky room, they go up these stairs to a turreted, like, tower.
And it's a really... a narrow staircase, too.
Yeah, like super creepy tower room, which honestly, can you even imagine as a teenager how great that would have been?
Yeah.
Except for the not being able to sneak out easily. But so he's got a room that's really sparse up in the tower that he's going to live in. And he immediately starts moving in, even though he's creeped out at being far away from his mother. And he drops his pencils or something and discovers a little triangular piece of metal that has etchings on one side. And something that looks like eyeballs, and on the other side, there's an animal head.
Yeah, it's like a little coin, kind of.
Mm-hmm, but it's like a triangular coin.
There's one thing you forgot to mention that's pretty important, which is when he's looking in his room, the butler guy comes up.
Jules,
and says there was an accident.
Oh,
somebody,
yeah.
Somebody, like, fell out the window.
So then we get to... Jules and Anna warning him not to touch Dr. Hackman's stuff. Oh, wait, no, I skipped ahead. So he goes snooping around the house after he's shown his room, and he finds a packing crate in the basement, which, I mean, what 12-year-old boy doesn't hop, like, straight to it and start looking around a what's basically a free-for-all museum? So he starts to, like, crack open this... packing crate, which is weird.
Yeah.
And then someone grabs him from behind, and it's like a jump scare at the end of the chapter. And then he turns around, and it's just Jules and Anna, and they warn him not to touch Dr. Hackman's stuff. And then they just lead him up for snacks and eventually dinner. And this is kind of where he sits down and gets to know Dr. Hackman a little better, who he discovers is kind of like super mean. And brings him, knowing that Paul is scared, he brings him and shows him the mummy in the basement that's in this crate.
So there's a few notes before that I'd like to mention. So Anna is the woman who's like the wife of the butler.
Yeah, I think she does like the cooking.
Yeah, well, they're like together.
Yeah.
So she's the one that taps him on the shoulder when he's peeking in the coffin thing and says... this isn't a place for kids and stuff. And I thought, man, she's already not helping the situation.
She's being real creepy.
And then he runs to his mom to tell her what's going on. And also, there's this kind of weird scene where he makes a mental note of how he thinks his mom's kind of a babe. Did you catch that?
No.
Yeah, he's like, and she has her hair disheveled or whatever. And she's looking really... she's a good-looking woman.
Okay.
And I thought, well, there's a side of that that's sweet, and then there's a side of that's kind of weird. But
that makes me think that the author was just trying to get a descriptor of his mother in there.
I guess.
And made it a little bit creepy.
But yeah, at dinner, the doctor takes Paul to the basement to show him a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, I mean, all the adults in this are not helping this kid at all, because they're like... no. Did you know there was an accident upstairs? Whoops, I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah.
This isn't a place for kids. I mean, just don't pay attention to what I just said. And then the doctor, on top of all of this, is
the doctor's, like, mean.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to go show you this mummy, and is super excited to tell him about a curse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, man, he gets spooked, and it's just...
he just tries to scare children, essentially. I think... Paul's mom is the only adult that doesn't just suck in this, but she's kind of oblivious to what's going on. So we also get the sense that this mummy was obtained sort of illegally, which isn't a surprise. It actually makes me think that Nixon, the author, has done her research, because there was a lot of that in the early 20th century of, like, stealing mummies and...
oh, for sure, yeah.
Tomb raiding and stuff. So that makes perfect sense with the story. It's really great. So there's a sense that something nefarious has happened, even just getting the mummy to the house. There's this discussion about curses, and then it's like, okay, time for Paul to go to bed.
Go to bed, which he tries, but he's all spooked, so he ends up waking
Yeah, he has a sense that there's someone else there, and he turns on the light to
nothing.
Well,
he wakes up to a cry in the middle of the night, like a kind of weird scream cry thing, and that was kind of a creepy little scene.
Yeah.
But then the next day, it's like...
Also, his window was open, too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the window was open.
Mm-hmm. And so that night, though, he hears an animal scream, wakes up, the window's open, and his mother also comes up because she had heard an animal scream. So she comes up to his room, and she thought it was him, and is, like, checking on him. But nope, not him, nothing. And it just kind of goes ahead to the next morning where it's like breakfast. Also, did you notice that even, what, 70-odd years later, he's able to describe every meal in great detail? He's like, we had buttered cabbage with, you know, braised almond.
I'm going to take it back to Titanic, and Rose could recall everything, too, you know?
Well, yeah, okay.
So, come on. Cut the old people a break. It's the next day. She's going to start work. Basically, like, this is the first real day. This all happened in the very first night, by the way.
Yeah.
And Paul gets asked to polish statues. He's like,
well,
I'm going to put you to work.
Well, he's supposed to have a job. Yeah. Like, they're out in the middle of nowhere, so he needs some industry, I suppose.
Yeah, so he's going to polish statues, and one of them is Anubis, which the doctor says is the one that he should watch out for because he protects the mummies. Like, he's just totally messing with his kid. Dr. Heckman is a jerk.
But sometimes also, don't you love to mess with preteens?
Oh, I love to mess with preteens
all
the time.
So, I mean, maybe Dr. Heckman just was being funny.
Right, sure.
But so he is polishing these sculptures, as you mentioned, and then one comes apart, like the base of it comes off, and it looks like it's got a spot for something. He also learns at this point that Anubis is the jackal-headed god, which has a sharp barking cry and is a guardian of the tombs. Mm-hmm. So that sharp barking cry is important to the storyline. And then what do? Go to dinner?
No. Later that day, he was asked to take the box to the basement.
Oh, yeah.
Where he noticed the mummy's eyes were missing and the doctor had hit them. He like runs up freaking out, runs into the doctor's office, and he's like, the eyes are gone. They're like golden
eyes.
Yeah.
There's like black sockets
in
the mummy's skull.
He freaks out and runs up there. And the doctor's like, they're super valuable and I hid them and only I know where they're at. And then after dinner is when he goes back to bed. So, like, they have dinner, and then it's basically the next night, which I like this story takes place a lot at night.
There's also one important detail that comes to play, so I'm going to interject it here. While he was taking the box downstairs, he had been told but forgot to lodge something under the door so it didn't close behind him. He forgot. The door fell shut and locked behind him, and he kind of freaked out and felt like something was down there with him, and he was banging on the door. And Jules and Anna opened the door and said, like, you got to put the stopper in the door. And it's an important detail because it comes into play later.
I would normally agree with that. However, the way it comes into play later doesn't really matter.
It doesn't. But they,
so I thought
they
that was
mention
kind of pointless.
It double. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be way more important than it was. So he goes to bed, but then he wakes up in the night to someone creeping up the stairs. And this is... So before we even get into this, because this is my favorite part of the entire book.
Oh,
this is the
terrifying
moment. Yeah. But I noticed already at the end of every chapter, she's kind of doing the gotcha thing. Like, and then he heard a scream, and then you have
like
to flip it.
Yeah, like R.L. Stein.
Yeah, but that's what I thought of. And I thought this, I think, predates him.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was already established writer at this point.
I mean, I don't think she invented it. It's been
no,
going on
but
forever.
To work in children's horror, where she's like an award-winning author at this point, and he's just coming up, I bet you he took a little page from
her. Well, R.L. Stein liked one of our photos on Instagram, so perhaps he will let us know.
Any excuse to bring that up.
Uh-huh.
We should tag him in this post.
Okay, let's do.
Okay, so...
So, yeah, he wakes up, like... falls asleep right away, but a short time later, in the middle of the night, wakes up to a sound on the stairs, and he calls out for his mother because he thinks maybe it's her. And then as he's like, Mom, The footsteps on the stairs stop moving, and there's silence for just a moment, and then...
Oh, before you do it, there's a... Because even before we get to the creepiest part...
Oh, yeah.
She sets the tone so well right here because she says the footstep gets right up to the end of the door, and he knows it's on the other side of the door because they're sharing, like, a board that is, like, the way I imagined it is the wooden floor... The board passes underneath the door because he said the board shifts mm-hmm. on his side of the door because it means that somebody has just stood directly on the other
yeah.
side of the door. It made me freaked out. For
yeah,
sure.
And before that, too, when he had called out to his mom on the stairs and they stopped, there was a pause and then they continued up the stairs. And then they get to the top, stand there. There's the shift, which is, you're right, it's super creepy.
It was just already setting such a creepy tone.
Yeah, and then... there's clearly, at this moment, he realizes someone on the stairs, and he, like, puts something under the door handle to wedge it. He makes sure the lock's in place, and then there's scratching on the
yes.
door.
I did not realize it was going to go this route. I thought it was going to be a little bit more
Ugh.
Lighthearted children's horror, but this whole scene is so scary.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's the next thing that happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, already the scratching... Okay,
so they're scratching. Paul asks, what do you want? And there's a whispered response. Okay.
Even more scary than that.
No, it doesn't happen until afterwards.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it's not until afterwards.
Okay, because that freaked me out, too.
That's it. So hold on.
Okay.
He asks, what do you want? The response is, where are my eyes? Which is terrifying.
Oh, how did it sound in your head?
I can't even. You tell me. You made me do Aladdin, so.
Okay. Yeah. I imagined it had an Australian accent. And it was like,
hi there, mate. Where are my eyes?
Okay, sorry. No, I'm lying. It didn't have an Australian accent. It probably had an Egyptian accent.
Okay. And so then it goes back to scratching, rattling the door, and then the most terrifying mm-hmm. part, and this is what sent me to live in my brother's bedroom like a weird 12-year-old sleeping in his other bed, sniffing at the door.
Yes.
Can you freaking imagine talking to somebody, they whisper, where are my eyes, and then sniff at your door?
You know what it reminded me of? So I was like, this whole scene is so creepy. Ugh. And I know it's like a children's book and people are like, okay, these are grown-ass adults talking about how scary it was. It was scary. It was legit scary. Yeah. And it's a build-up. It's a slow build to this moment. And I didn't realize it was going to go that route.
The sniffing.
It reminded me of Ravenous. Do you remember?
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes!
It's that same kind of weird feel when they wake up in the night and
he's like licking at their wounds.
Yeah. It's that same kind of thing. The sniffing sent it over the top. Because the scratching, I was like, ooh, they're scratching? But I still thought it was somebody in the house.
Being kind of creepy.
Then the where are my eyes, I was like, ooh, that's spooky, so it's like a spirit. But then the sniffing, I was like, wait, what am I even reading right now?
Yeah.
Oh, such a good spot.
What a choice of words to haunt somebody forever. If it had just been scratching and where are my eyes, it probably wouldn't have affected me as deeply. But for some reason, the sniffing.
Yeah, sniffing was really creepy.
Turned up the terror factor so much. So, okay. After that, he runs to the chest, and he pulls out the eye coin that he had mm-hmm. found in his bedroom, and there's a sharp barking cry from outside the door, which honestly, I just got a chill thinking about it. Oh, it's the worst. Then he tosses the coin out the window.
Yes, because he figured that it's probably after it, so he mm-hmm. should just throw it out the window, out over the cliff side. Mm-hmm. But then he immediately decides that was probably not the best idea because if the doctor finds it and he's doing this, he may put it back in his room.
Yeah, so he suspects that the doctor snuck that coin in his room to, do something to
him. Well, because the doctor earlier, when he was creeping him out, said, mm-hmm. I know how to avoid the curse.
Yeah.
And so Paul thinks, oh, it must be that he's planted this in my room so that,
yeah.
you know, something would come after me and not him. So he's like, I've got to go get that dumb coin I just threw out the top of a turret.
Because he's afraid the doctor will go find it and put it in his mom's room or something.
Yeah. So he got it. Like, he waits until the thing leaves.
Well, after he throws it, it's like instantly gone.
Yeah. And then he walks down the stairs at night, runs outside, finds it, and then hides it in that Anubis statue.
The base that he...
Where he found that base was. Mm-hmm. And he puts it in there, and it starts to glow.
Yeah.
And he's totally creeped out. So he gets scared, and he runs into his mom's room to tell her. And as he's telling her, and she's like, not again.
He's like, we have to stay till morning. We have to stay till morning. And I'm not quite sure where he decides this morning light thing, but...
I don't know, but she's like, come on, you know, you're having a nightmare. And then all of a sudden, they both hear a scream.
Yeah.
And this is a pretty interesting scene.
Okay, so there are a couple of, like, a scream followed by another scream and some thumping sounds.
Yeah.
And at first his mom is like horrified and frozen, but then she's like, somebody fell down the stairs. And there's like a discussion about how she, like, grown up rationalizes it. She's like, probably somebody fell down the stairs. We need to call for help. And she starts to get ready to go check it out. And so she goes out of the room just as the sun has risen. And he's like, whew, okay, mom's not going to be, I don't know, sniffed by Anubis. And then she's out. Anna and Jules come out too, aroused by the sound of the, like, screams. So we know none of them were screaming. The police are called because there's no sign of Dr. Hackman anywhere.
Ever again.
Yeah, Paul and his mom leave that very day.
So do the
Jules
couple.
And Anna.
Yeah, they're like, we're out of here.
That's it. Hackman's house is closed up from 1911 till 1980, whenever.
And it switches then back to real time, where Debbie and Jeff decide, oh, we're going to get that $10,000 reward because that mummy is in there.
Yeah, and then Paul, as 80-something-year-old Paul, is like, you know, many people have tried to find the mummy, but they end up being terrified away. And he gives, like, some examples of ghost hunters and...
Treasure hunters. Stuff, and they get spooked out and they run. But I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to go get that $10,000 reward. How many years ago was this reward?
It's seriously
issued?
Like 70 years.
And shouldn't it be worth, like, a hell of a lot more by now if that was the case?
Who's even offering this money? Who cares?
Yeah, also...
And they're mummies, a dime a dozen.
I just have a big issue. This is my only... I mean, we can maybe wait. I'll wait.
Mm.
I'll wait until the end of the book to do kind of a little...
Okay.
Our thoughts on it.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're like hell-bent on getting this $10,000 reward. So they pack up and they head to the house. There's this great little scene about them, like, really preparing because... This is backstory on my childhood. I would go, like, hiking in canyons or up in the mountains, and I took packing very seriously. Mm-hmm. So I would prepare, like, snack mix and sandwiches and flashlights and a knife and rope and, like, anything I could conceivably need to go on a journey.
Of course
journey.
You did. That was so
And I had,
you.
Like, my pack. And I love that she was doing this, too. Anna was, like, packing sandwiches, getting
Debbie,
ready.
Debbie, you mean?
Or Debbie, sorry, yeah. Packing sandwiches. She's like, hey, do you also want some cookies? He says, I don't think I need any cookies. And so she just takes chocolate chips. She pulls the old Chuck pizza in the pocket thing and puts the cookies in her pockets without any kind
Which
of wrapping.
Is like what a 12-year-old
It is exactly
would do.
What a 12-year-old would
also
do.
Also like an adult male. But also I want to mention that this section is part two.
Oh, I love that also.
The horror.
The horror. I love that she divided it by, I mean, it's got chapters.
Yeah.
But the whole first half of the book has its own subtitle, and then the second half has it. And it's brilliant because it really does break you from the past into the present.
Yes.
And that was a really cool thing that, an approach towards this book. They pack up, they head to the house.
And it's, everything is the same.
Oh, I also love that they're both all in. Usually in these kinds of books, there's like one that's like, no way, man. And then the other has to convince them. The dynamic of these cousins are so much fun.
Cousins are unstoppable.
But they're
together.
Both like, oh, yeah, we're totally both in on it. And it's they called themselves the Gruesome Twosome or something like that, which was funny because I saw a concert with Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie, and it was called The Gruesome Twosome Tour. And I was like, did they get this from House on Hackman's Hill?
Yes.
I wouldn't put it past him. Anyway, I loved that they were all in. Their attitude was great in this whole entire book. And then they get into the house. They find it. It's basically undisturbed, but really run down. And right away, they see the statues that Paul was talking about.
Right there, the statue of Anubis on the table where he left it.
And so she decides to take a photo because there's this sub-story, which is just as dumb as the reward sub-story, that she's going to win her local photo class competition. So she's got like
Is that dumb? She's got hobbies.
Because
interests.
She's got like a Polaroid. And she's always like, oh, this might be the winning shot. But she's just taking photos of, like, nonsense. So
I love that.
She takes a photo of the statues. And then as the photo develops, she looks at it. And what's wrong with the Anubis statue?
There is no Anubis statue.
It is gone.
Everything else, there. Also, may I tell a moment here? Her name is Debbie. I think she should create a new career for herself in magic. Yep, that's right. I'm
what
bringing
it
back. Her stage name would be Abracadabra. Thank you for laughing at that again.
Way to work it in. You're really determined to hold on to that.
When I saw her name was Debbie, I was like, I gotta tell that one.
I've got an idea.
What?
What about, since you're sad to let go of Lord of the Dogs as your, like, little catchphrase thing, what if you're now introduce yourself as Abracadabra?
Oh my goodness.
So she takes a photo, the statue's gone. Oh, and then of course, just like Wait Till Helen Comes, we talk about this all the time, the Return to Oz, Labyrinth, Neverending Story. What is gotta happen? If the story is starting to get a little crazy, a storm has to move in.
Storm.
I mean, it even happened in Slumber Party. Remember the Christopher's Pike book?
Well, they have to be forced to stay there because your first instinct is, why did you not immediately leave this place when the first sign of something horrific happening is going on? So they're trapped. They can't go because it's a blizzard. They can't just wander into a blizzard.
Yep. And they hear a noise right away. So they realize the storm's coming in. They have a little bit of a talk. Oh, sorry. If you hear her coughing, it's because... You're
I've
still getting
sick.
Over a cold. We've done our best to edit them out, but they keep sneaking in.
Sorry.
So they hear a noise, and Jeff finds a photo of a mummy, but Debbie is missing. Do you remember that whole, like, scene?
Yeah, so they start looking. They end up in the library, and they're just kind of looking, and then he has something he wants to show her, and she's gone.
Well, he finds this photo, and it's got a mummy, and he's like, hey... And then she's gone, and that's kind of the gotcha to get to the next chapter.
And then Jeff, like, freaks out monumentally, which I would too.
Yeah.
I mean, fair
enough.
Yeah,
you're in, like, a haunted house, so.
Well played, Jeff. Good time to freak out. So he runs and is calling for Debbie, and he's hearing thumping in the walls. And then, suddenly, when all hope is lost, Debbie appears, and... is like, whatever, here's a secret passage, bro.
Oh, man, I, in my notes, just have it, like, all caps. She found a secret passage, because if there is one thing I love as much as mummies, it's secret passages in homes.
Yes.
All I wanted in my life as a kid was secret passages in my house. I wanted to be able to move bookshelves and drawers and everything else, and could not get it. So, side story... When we moved to New Mexico, when I was a child, we moved from California to New Mexico, and my grandfather was an architect, and he was going to build our family home. So we were staying in this trailer on a lot of land while he built the house. It took years to build. And so I got to help him with the floor plans and, like, mix concrete and put up the walls as a kid. And when he was building what was going to be my room downstairs, I tried... every play in the book to get him to build a secret tunnel on the floor, like to open up a secret latch in my floor of my bedroom that would tunnel down below the ground.
Wait, the bedroom on the second floor?
No, that was my sister's bedrooms originally.
Oh, okay.
So but by the time it was built, one sister had already been married and moved out, and the other was like, F you, and left the house. So,
oh, okay.
Well, she was a teen, and she was, like, ready to go on her own. And so I was left on my own. By the time we moved into the house, really, it was me. And I was like, oh, dude, I'm going upstairs. Nobody lives up there.
Okay.
But I was originally supposed to be down in the creepy clown room that my mom has. That was supposed to be my bedroom.
Okay, we have to take a quick sidestep and say that Eric's mother has an entire room that is filled with actual thousands of clowns. Continuing on.
Yeah, it's what your nightmares are made of. That room was supposed to be my bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to convince my grandfather to put a trap door in the floor with a tunnel built underground that would lead out to my dog, who slept in the house with me, but he also had a little kennel. His name was Skippy. He was a German Shepherd. He was like my absolute BFF. He had a kennel that was right outside of the house that we'd put him in sometimes, just like whenever we needed to. And I didn't want to be away from him. So I tried to get my grandpa to build me a secret tunnel so that when I wanted, I could open up the door in my room, go under the tunnel outside underground and come up in my dog's kennel to hang out with him. And I wanted it to come into a doghouse that was heated and cooled, because my grandfather, sorry, this is way off, but
it's okay. Do it.
My grandfather, being an architect, and you knew him briefly, you know, you knew him for, well, I guess for
not
20
briefly.
Years. Well, but you knew him like when he was older.
Decades.
He died when he was 99, but he was this really clever guy, really kooky, funny guy. When I was a kid, he had this little wiener dog. I don't remember what its name was, but he had built it a doghouse in the backyard of his house that looked like a miniature house. And he had wired up to his light switch inside the house a light so that he could turn the light in the doghouse on and off. And it had heating in it too. That's so it was like great. Its own miniature house. And that's what I wanted him to do for my dog.
Oh, he should have built a Corvette for your dog.
Yeah. Long story short, I did not get the tunnel or any secret passages.
Okay. So back to the point. No, that was a really good story. I love it. So yeah. She shows him the...
That wasn't believable.
No, I love that story. It did sound like I was dismissive, but I actually really love that story. And I love your grandpa, and I don't love your mom's clown room. I sometimes just, in the middle of the day, will think of it. Anyway.
Okay, so storm's moving in, Debbie's missing, she found a secret passage, and they also get hungry and decide it's a good time to eat. I love this part of the book. Okay, so I've been alluding to it, but here we go. They eat a cheese sandwich that she packed, and then she's like, I'm still hungry. You want a cookie? And she pulls the cookie out of her pocket, but it's crumbled.
Aww.
And it's got lint. It's a great description. It's in crumbles. It's got lint mixed in with it and a Kleenex, and he is totally grossed out, and he is like, gross, no way. And she, well, I want to hang out with her, because she's like, well, whatever, I'm hungry.
I'm going to eat this
cookie. I'm going to eat that. And she just picks out the like lint and just eats her cookie. And I'm like, that's a 12-year-old right there.
Same girl, Debbie. I would do it in my 30s.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. Blah-bitty-blah. They look around. Oh, their flashlight begins to die, too.
And they're going to go up into the tower, because he realizes, Jeff is like, wait, if there's passages... They're remembering Paul's story about somebody getting in the room and opening the window. And he's like, there's got to be a passage.
Like a second entry.
Yeah, there's got to be a way that you could get into that tower room. So they're going to go up there and look for a passage. And they go in there and they're looking around.
And everything is described is the same as Mr.
Oh, it's great.
Paul had said. And then Jeff even grabs a book that he had, like his little...
Dime novel that he had mentioned
to like give back to him later.
Yeah, and they're up there looking, and then what happens?
What does happen?
They start to hear something come up the stairs.
Yes,
something's coming up the stairs. Gets right to the door, starts scratching, and says, "Hey there, mate."
Well, she says, Debbie says, "What do you want?" And of course, again, we have, "Where are my eyes?"
Yes, but he whispers it.
No, he says it with a Minnesotan accent.
What does he say?
I don't know. Then they panic.
He's a Canadian. Where are my eyes, eh? I've been walking around this house. I've been out. I've been outside.
Ooting a boot.
And I've been walking around and where are my eyes, E?
Hey, speaking of which, we're doing potato, potato, tomato, tomato. And like, sure, British people will say tomato, but do they say potato?
Ooh, good question.
I don't think anybody says potato.
I think somebody like Rusa Salk is like, Daddy, I want a tomato.
Tomato, but we need potato.
British and then people, what if he's like,
tell
honey,
us, do you say potato?
Honey, I don't have any tomatoes, but I do have a potato.
This is getting weird.
Okay. Well, you wanted answers. I'm giving them.
Okay, so then
what I do.
Where are my eyes? Potato. They climb into a wardrobe because they realize he's banging or it's banging on the door. And he could probably break down the door of this old house. So they climb into the wardrobe, kind of being afraid that they're going to be trapped, but they don't have any alternatives.
What if, as they are climbing into the wardrobe, the door opens and it's Mr. Tumnus?
Oh, they end up in Narnia. Oh, that would be great.
Well, instead, no, that was the sniffing and scratching. It was a fawn.
Ugh. So they...
Real listeners will get that one.
So they discover a hidden passage as they climb into the wardrobe and a panel breaks out. And then it's some really super narrow stairs that lead them downward. And they're like, we got to get out of here. They climb down and enter what appears to be Dr. Hackman's bedroom. Jeff leads the way in the dark and he's holding Debbie's hand.
What? First off, isn't that creepy? Did you not? I was totally creeped out when they said it went from his bedroom to this other room.
Yeah.
And that he's like creeping in on people.
Oh, horrific.
Dr. Hackman was a creep.
He was the worst.
Yep.
Why?
So he, it leads to, yeah. So Jeff's looking around the stairway and he's like, stay here. I'm going to look around.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then she comes up and takes his hand and he's mm-hmm. like, it's cold. Let go because you're kind of hurting my hand mm-hmm. a little. And this was a great little reveal here.
Yeah, and then Debbie, like, says, like, how long are you going to be here or something?
Yeah, from, like, across the room.
I'm scared over here. And he realizes he has not been holding Debbie's hand. And then suddenly there's no hand there and nobody there because he turns on his flashlight and just reveals that there's nobody. And then they're like, well, crap. So let's trap this, which...
Well, there's an interesting scene... here.
Oh, okay.
How he gets away is not that. He doesn't turn on a flashlight and then say, let's go away. He realizes the only way to get out is to, like, basically throw himself down the staircase and then
falls.
Finds the flashlight at the bottom because, remember, the other flashlight was down on the chair.
Yeah.
Turns it, points it up, and nothing's
and
there.
Then there's nothing.
And I totally thought of, like, Scooby-Doo, like the mummy,
yes!
like, sneaking up and being like, I'm going to hold
this
your hand.
This is 100% Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Same thought in my mind. So, and then they're like, we need to trap this. Although, it's kind of weird that they would think they could trap something that's not, that, like, seems to be able to disappear at will.
Yeah, I didn't get any of this.
Yeah.
This was a major problem. But at the same time, I kept telling myself they're 12.
Yes.
So, and so, yeah, they come up with a plan.
To, between passageways and rooms, like, lure him in and trap him, like, lock him into the room.
Yeah, they're going to lure him into one room, lock it behind him, and then they'll sneak through the hidden passage and then lock him in the other room from the outside. And then he'll be locked in by using the coin to lure him in. So they go open the Anubis mm-hmm. jar. And sure enough, there's the coin that Paul had talked about when he was a kid. And they bring it. And so he falls in and it works. But this is where they first see him. They actually see Anubis. And I did not know this whole book if they were going to actually, like reveal
what,
it.
What it would be.
But he says he's sitting there in the hiding spot waiting for him to come in for their plan. And this man walks in with a jackal head. And it is terrifying.
I truly had fear of jackal until I was, like, 20 because of this. And jackals are great. But definitely this scarred me.
But they trap him in and then... The plot moves pretty quick here because...
Yeah, it just, like, scoots along.
Well, Jeff comes up with a plan as they're leaving. He looks up at that, I know this... Only I know
the
secret.
Arch. Yeah,
and
only
he's like,
I know the secret.
Wait, something's up with the eye. It's got this weird shadow on it.
Yeah.
Pulls up a table, like, gets up there and realizes it's like a hidden spot.
It's a little spot. Yeah,
he reaches up in there and he finds the golden eyes.
Not only the eyes, also a map of the house. Mm-hmm. So they've got mummy eyes, map of the house. There's moaning in the library, and they realize that they haven't fully locked him in. They only locked one door, so Anubis found the secret passage and is probably going to escape.
And he's pissed.
He's unhappy with the situation, and he's clearly moaning when they discover the eyes. He's like, I want my eyes. Like, why don't they just give him the eyes?
Jerk kids. And instead, Jeff comes up with a brilliant idea. Let's run down into the basement and look for the mummy instead, because that reward is everything.
Well, he wants it for his dad.
And we will stop at nothing to get the reward. And then when she's kind of starting to be a little bit like, I really don't think we need to be looking for the mummy and the reward, he throws it back on her and he's like, but remember this, you could win your camera club contest with a photo of a mummy. And she's like, dude, you're so right. Let's go find that mummy.
Yeah. Also, at this point, the storm is starting to let up. So they do go into the basement. They find like a false wall, which is where the original mummy had been, like in a little alcove. And they had obviously packed and brought a screwdriver with them. And they use it to dig out the wall. And inside it, they see the mummy.
Yeah. Before that, though, there's a pretty big thing that happens where they use the screwdriver to actually find a trap door in the floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they open that up. And what it is a trap door that leads to a cave, natural earth cave below, that then opens up into
like the valley.
The valley. So it's like an escape hatch.
And they knew that was there because of the map of the house that they had found within the eye.
And then they find that false wall, they dig it out, and they find that Anubis comes and slams the door behind him and shuts him in.
Yeah, so because they forgot to put the little blocker in the door.
They didn't.
Oh, yeah, they had put the blocker in the door because of Paul's story to
them. Yeah, she remembers, which I loved. So I love that in the book, she's like, wait, don't forget to put the thing. And I'm like, cool, this is going to have a point. But then Anubis is just like, nope, and shuts them in. I'm like, well, that had zero... That was completely pointless.
Well, and actually even more so because Anubis wants to get to them. So why would he close the door instead of just coming down?
But yeah, I don't know. But they find the mummy, but then they also notice something else.
They want to snap some shots of it. Debbie starts taking some pictures, but it isn't the mummy, is it?
Well, there's two mummies.
Yeah. One of them is Dr. Hackman.
Because he's got his blue cap on underneath.
And his beard.
Yeah.
And it's at that point that the basement door had closed. There's also snuffling again on the outside of the door, which, anytime I hear somebody sniffing outside of a door now, I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Don't sniff at my door.
Because people do that all the time. And so they decide to exit through the cave. They're like, look, we got to just get out of here because he's going to open up the door and come out. And Jeff is like...
He suddenly loses his mind.
He is nuts here. He's like, take the mummy.
We got to grab this corpse.
It's not a full body. Grab that stupid corpse, Debbie, and you're taking it. I need that money.
Debbie,
do
Debbie,
it.
Debbie, get this corpse.
And so they start. She jumps down into the cave, and he starts to shove the mummy, and it's too big. And all of a sudden, Anubis opens the door and is like walking down the stairs towards
him. Coming after him.
She's screaming. It's a very terrifying scene. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, shit. Push it back in. And so they push the mummy back in, and he jumps out. They shut the door and lock
it. They toss the mummy at Anubis.
Oh, yeah, they throw the mummy at him. That's right. And then they jump in. He jumps out, and then they make it. And they're like, they've survived. Then they make it to the sun has started to come up.
It's daylight.
They work their way to the road. And they see that there's a snowplow coming. And sure enough, in the snowplow is like the driver, but then it's also Grandpa and the old neighbor, Mr. Karsten.
Yeah.
And Grandpa's like, I thought you'd be here because he said you might have come up this way. And I'm like, yeah, because he gave your grandkids crazy stories.
He's like, here's how you get 10K.
Yeah,
go to the basement.
Go to the mummy. They tell him all about it. They show him the photo. And then as they're doing that, there's this really weird post scene that was kind of out of nowhere. It's like an afterthought. Don't know if it really was necessary or fit. But Paul, the old man, like scuttles off when nobody notices while they're all like reminiscing and talking at the snowplow. And the house goes up in flames, and he walks out of the house and is like, it's done, and burns the entire mansion to the ground.
I mean, it needed to be done.
Sure, but it was a little like, wait, what just happened?
Well, okay, you're 80. You yeah. got nothing to lose. You're living clearly in some sort of backcountry. And you're like, okay, the mummy, it attacked me. It attacked these children. Somebody's going to die. I'm just going to, let's just burn this house down.
I mean, whatever. I don't mind at all. I don't.
Nobody lives here. There's no threat of forest fire because it's a snowy day.
It was just a little out of nowhere. But there is one little quote that I did write down here that made me laugh out loud on the train. Like I always am
reading
in front of everybody, reading
literature.
My children's horror. when she shows her grandfather the photo of the mummy for like proof, she also goes, oh, by the way, this is her actual quote. By the way, that's Dr. Hackman's body next to the mummy. And I'm like, a 12-year-old is so calm and cool. Like, oh, and there's a body. There's the corpse, just in case you were wondering.
I saw Anubis and some corpses today, and I ate a lint cookie.
Yeah.
Grandpapa.
And
Abracadabra.
It's kind of a Goonies ending where they're like, but we didn't get the mummy. We don't have any money. And then Jeff's like, but wait a minute. It just reminded me of the Goonies when he pulls out the jewels from his pocket. Or the maid finds the jewels. Rosalita.
Yeah. Rosita.
And he pulls out the two golden eyes, and he's like, oh, and then Paul's like, oh, you're going to get a lot of money for that.
Because Paul's clearly an Egyptologist.
Oh, yeah. He knows all about it. And then the very end scene is, as they're driving back, Grandpa reveals that he had gone to town for a secret and that he had bought them tickets to a
New Kids on the Block concert.
That's what it was. It was a New Kids on the Block concert / museum exhibition where an Egyptian show was coming through town and they could finally see a real mummy, and they all laugh. And a book. That's House on Hackman's Hill. What did you think second time through?
I think it's a lot for kids. I mean, I remember being truly terrified by it. Do you? I mean, do you think that it's I obviously don't remember being terrified by it, but do you think it's a lot for kids? Like, almost too much?
Well, what's nice is that we have young kids, so I can actually start to think, is this appropriate for them? Myself at that age, I would have eaten this up and read it several times. Our daughters at this age, no way could they handle this. It was pretty scary.
Yeah.
There's a few scenes in there that were very scary. Now, as a book, as a children's horror book,
so good.
Coming off of Wait Till Helen Comes, I will say I love this story more, but Wait Till Helen Comes was way better written. Like, it was a beautifully written book.
It was more well written, for sure.
This has some major issues that I have with it.
Yeah.
The main one being the stupid reward money plot.
Yeah.
They're 12. If you tell any 12-year-old on the planet there's a creepy house and a mummy in it, that's all they need. They will absolutely 100% break in and look for it.
Well, and
they
if
did not need the reward money.
And if there had been $10,000, had really only a few people come looking.
Yeah, it would have been found by now.
It would have been like torn apart by, you know, transients and ghost hunters and whatever.
That was my biggest issue, was I just felt like that was super unnecessary and pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then, and underdeveloped, really.
Yes.
But then the other one was their kind of nonchalant approach towards Anubis looking for his eyes the whole time. Like, they were like, he's cool. He's trapped in the library. Don't worry about it. Let's go find a mummy.
Also, why not just give Anubis his eyes? They're not your eyes.
I don't know,
to
but
him.
They really were like, dude, he is not a threat.
He does
he is
not
just
deserve
an Egyptian
his eyes.
God who is like has supernatural powers. No biggie. I was really confused the whole entire book why they were so cool.
Yeah.
Like, even the first approach when he comes up the stairs in the tower, scratches, says, where are my eyes? And she's like, what? She's like, it's like a sarcastic, what do you want? And he's like, my eyes, dude. And she's like, no. It was really,
well,
the approach was very strange for me. But the book overall, you had me at mummies, storm, castle,
door sniffing,
secret passages. Yeah. I had it all. I loved every moment of this book. And I really loved that it went from an old story into present day story.
Yeah.
And those paths crossed. Really fun. I mean, what a classic.
Yeah, I think as adults you can go, oh, here are the plot holes. But when you read it as a kid, you don't care about that. You're just like, what?
Yeah.
Ah, blah. And who sniffs the doors?
So,
only the devil.
I give it the definite seal of approval, the Laser Grave seal of approval. I think you should. I would assume a lot of people have read this. It's definitely a major classic from the 80s. However, if you haven't, it's a really fun read.
I'm sure I got it at the book fair, so you probably did.
Yeah, it was
too.
A Scholastic gem for sure. But that's that. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. If you want to follow us,
please do.
We're on Instagram at Laser Graves. You can download us and subscribe at Podbean and iTunes and Spotify. You can give us a little 5-star rating.
Please give us
a review. Follow us on Instagram just so that we can kind of start to spread the word. We're having a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah.
And we're starting to really get into it. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And we will be back next week with
something else.
Who knows what? But I can tell you it's within a 10-year time span of the
80s. That's good.
Right. Bye, guys.
Thanks. Bye.